It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You will get first look at all of our upcoming guests as well as our op-eds, our Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts, just all the things that we are doing, and we'd appreciate it if you would go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. We have a big show planned for you again today. We will be talking with Scott Wilder with Save the Children in this first segment. Segments 2, 3, and 4 we'll be chatting with Ben Martin. You know him. He is a patriotic historian. He is a former Army Ranger, a West Point grad. He has a great love for our American founding. So we've been going through this throughout this year, the important documents and speeches of America's founding. Today we'll be talking about slavery, but not confined to that. Also the contributions of Black Americans to America's founding, and then also moving to this 1776 project with Bob Woodson. And so that's going to be a super conversation with Ben Martin. This show is brought to you by the Harris family. We are so grateful for their support of the show, and I want to say thank you to them as well. Last night was our salon series, our Voter's Guide over at Water's Edge Winery. It was a big success, Producer Steve.
Well, that was going to be my first request, is to give us an update. Tell us how it went.
We actually, Rick Turnquest and I, as many of you know, put together this Voter's Guide for the issues and the amendments, the propositions that are on the ballot this year. And we went through each of them. There's 11 of them. And then we had comments back and forth. And some of it got very robust. I felt like it was the founding because not everybody agreed, but it was a robust, it was a great evening. Just loved seeing all of you listeners out there. It was just, it was really, really fun. We realized that not everyone will agree with us on that, and that is just fine.
Are you saying that there was no broken glass, nobody started a fire in the parking lot, or?
Nope.
Hmm.
Hmm. So that means that we can't actually talk about things civilly. And then come to our own opinions on that. So it was a big success. We're going to do another one. And this is going to be October 19th. Zach will have the link to sign up on the website a little bit later today. I would recommend that you sign up early because I think by that time, people are really going to be paying attention to the ballot. And so that will be October 19th over at Water's Edge Winery. It was a lot of fun, Steve.
Well, looking ahead with what's to happen tonight, you know the interest level is going to, if it were charted out, it would the hill would get very steep after tonight.
Yes, tonight is the Biden-Trump debates. It's going to be very interesting. I think there's watch parties all over the city, and it should be very, very interesting. You know what I think the tactic is going to be? They're talking about Trump's tax returns, and the New York Times just came out with an article about it just this last weekend, and I think that is what they're coaching Biden on. That is all he's going to talk about is Trump's tax returns. That's my prediction.
Yeah, agreed. I heard speculation today or analysis this morning already that said that what the New York Times got a hold of is really old news, but yet they'll bring it out, dress it up, and try to make it sound like it's really some new revelation. So
I think it's manipulated. I think what they're trying to do is to try to do a smokescreen, trying to get Trump to release his tax returns. But I think I heard him say that he was under audit. It doesn't make sense to do that. And so I think that's where they want to go, is that's what they want to get him with today. We'll see what it's going to be in 2 days, but that's what I think it's going to be tonight.
Conversely, I hear that the Trump campaign will probably press Joe Biden on his son's activities over the last, I don't know, 8 to 10 years.
Well, I hope he does, because most people that are watching mainstream media, they don't even know that. They don't even know that Hunter Biden was thick with the Russians, thick with the Chinese. you know, bank account. He got paid for a bunch of stuff. I think a lot of people don't know that. And I'm sure that Trump is going to bring that out tonight.
Yeah, ask the man in the street what Burisma is and they'll,
Mm-hmm.
What?
After tonight, I bet they will know. So let's continue on because we are jam-packed. As you know, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. That's how Rick and I went, looked at these issues regarding our voter's guide. I'd recommend that you go to my website. It's 24 pages long, but it's I think it's actually a very interesting read. And we did do a summary at the end. We also took three issues on. There is 17 Democrat House of Representatives here in Colorado that basically voted to let people die alone. And after the Steve and Elizabeth Ryder story that we had earlier this year, it is cruel. And so we did note all those 17, and then we did note who you should vote for, who their challengers are. So that's very important information. We look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. It's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their livelihood, or their freedom via force, whether it's with a weapon policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, or fear. If something is a good idea, you should not need force to implement it. Love to say thank you to this great group of people that I get to work with. That's Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. And also to each of you listeners. I met a lot of you last night. You're each are treasured. You're valued. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Our inspiration for today, because Ben Martin will be talking about Bob Woodson. And Bob Woodson is a senior, or Bob Woodson Sr. is an American civil rights activist, a community development leader, an author, and founder and president of the Woodson Center. And we've had him on the show, and we need to get him on again. The Woodson Center is a nonprofit, nonpartisan research and demonstration organization that supports neighborhood-based initiatives to revitalize low-income communities. In February of 2020, Woodson launched the center's 1776 Unites campaign to counter the New York Times 1619 Project. Bob Woodson was born in 1937, and this is what he said. The virtues that the United States founding fathers like Samuel Adams championed, honesty, hard work, and perseverance, are key to self-reliance. Pretty well says it, Steve.
Yeah, I'm thinking the first person that comes to mind is the late Herman Cain, mm-hmm. in terms of all the things that he strove for, and certainly he was self-reliant.
He certainly was self-reliant, and, you know, he just passed on from COVID. Within the last few months, and that is a big loss, that's for sure. Do we have Scott on yet?
We do.
Okay. Right, Scott Wilder with Save the Children. Welcome to the show.
Hi. It's good to be here. I was just listening, and I was just noting, just combining two things. The debate tonight, if you really want to watch the debate tonight, it seems like the perfect pairing would then be at Water's Edge Winery. See if you're going to, that way just to make it through the 2 hours.
That's true.
No, it's great to be with you. We have a great day of hope today for Save the Children, day two of two. It's COVID-19 Emergency Relief Day of Hope. And you've probably been hearing about it right here at KLZ. And today, a very special announcement. Every gift given today and today only for COVID-19 Emergency Relief is increased tenfold, but only today. Now, this is going right here in the United States. Many times we talk about children in other parts of the world, obviously, over there. But in times of crisis and disaster, Save the Children works right here at home. And, of course, COVID-19 and the coronavirus qualifies as a disaster. And so standing in the gap for U.S. school children who, with school canceled or school in question, simply do not have access to the breakfast and lunch programs. And so already having made over 8 million meals so far, Save the Children is standing in the gap, inviting you to stand in the gap. And whatever you do today is going to be increased tenfold. And Kim, what I like about this is it's guy math. I can do this math. Just put a zero on the end of it. Very quickly, I can tell you the impact of your gift. $24, that's $240. $69, that's $690. $100, that's $1,000. That's the impact today. And today only, when you go online to savechildrenklz.org or when you call this number, 800-520-2649, 800-520-2649.
Scott, how are you finding these children? How are you getting the food to these kids?
Well, in many ways, through the school programs, even though the schools are shut down, I'll give you an example. About a mile from where I'm sitting right now, we're coming to you from the great state of Texas today, which, by the way, it's 55 degrees this morning in Texas, in Dallas. Unbelievably cool. So we're enjoying this, even it'll probably warm up, but it's nice today. About a mile from where I'm sitting right now, there is an elementary school that is a feeding center for this whole area. And where you normally would drop your kids off at school, parents showing ID, proper ID, that their children are part of the breakfast and lunch program, they will drive through, present that identification, and receive those meals there. Also at food pantries, also even at churches. So wherever there's in Hawaii, when I was on the radio in Hawaii, they were doing it there at the football stadium. So a big parking lot, people coming through. So Save the Children is preparing the meals. And, of course, today, really in the afterglow of our 100th anniversary, last May, Save the Children turned 100. And so last May, we kind of hold on to this great opportunity to give listeners a chance to increase their gifts tenfold, but only for a day. So this really is, it's not like that President's Day mattress sale that you think is one day, but it lasts like 3 weeks. This really is only one day. If you call Kim tomorrow and say, hey, I meant to do it, I thought about it, prayed about it, talked about it, never did it, can I still do it? No, you can't. You cannot get the tenfold increase except today at 800-520-2649 or online at SaveChildrenKLZ.org.
Okay, and one more time on that phone number and that website.
Sure, a website is SaveChildrenKLZ.org, and the phone number is 800-520-2649.
Scott Wilder, thank you so much for joining me this morning, and thank you for caring for our children.
Kim,
it is so
you.
Important, so thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay, we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is one of my valued partners. They have 5 locations. They have one in Aurora, Loveland, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. And we have some sports on the television these days. So the Hooters Restaurants is a great place to go and watch that. Or just to get together with friends for a happy hour. I just love sitting out on the patio, talking with friends. It's just these beautiful Colorado evenings. So would highly recommend that. They do have specials for, dine-in, also to go. They got this great party pack. And if you want more information, you can go to HootersColorado.com. That's HootersColorado.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Ben Martin.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Hi, this is Scott Wilder, and today, your gift on this COVID-19 Emergency Relief Day of Hope is increased tenfold today only. Call 800-520-2649 or go to SaveChildrenKLZ.org.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter there. Be sure and go over to Facebook and give us a like. And we have our Voters Guide 2020 on the website now. I worked with Rick Turnquest on this. It is very extensive. It has the ballot language. It has the link to any texts of the measure or initiatives that are behind that. And then we give our opinion, and we hope that it'll be a good tool for you as you fill out your ballot. On the line with me is my friend, Ben Martin. This show is brought to you by the Harris family. And Ben Martin, you know him. He is a patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, a West Point grad, I met him, I'm not quite sure when I met him, but I took a couple of classes that he did, that he taught regarding our founding, and it just brought these people alive. Ben Martin, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm glad to be here this morning. How are you doing, Kim?
I am doing well, and you?
I'm doing really pretty well, thank
you very
much.
Today is a very important subject, and that is slavery and the contribution of Black Americans to our founding and also to our founding that we're fighting for right now. So where do you want to start, Ben Martin?
Well, I'd like to start by saying, Kim, that it's great to be with you today and that we want to talk about Black Americans today and how they have made significant contributions to America from its founding to our current times. And I'm going to talk about several topics here today. I'm going to talk about Black Americans first in our Revolutionary War, because this whole thing is about Black Americans and their contributions in our American founding. So we're going to talk about Black Americans in the Revolutionary War. Then we're going to go to the Northwest Ordinance of 1787. We're going to talk about Jefferson as he confronted the Missouri Compromise of 1820. You know, he was a very old man by then. But it shocked him, and we want to know, let the viewers know or the listeners know what the Missouri Compromise meant to him at that time. And then we might be able to talk a little bit about Frederick Douglass and his famous July 4th speech in 1852 about what the 4th of July means to a slave. Then we're going to talk about Black Americans in the Civil War. We're going to talk about Lincoln and the Emancipation and the 13th Amendment. And then finally, we're going to end up talking about Bob Woodson and President Trump. And they have projects that sound the same, and they're doing a lot of the same things. Bob Woodson, is called 1776 Project, and President Trump's is called the 1776 Commission. And I think these are both important to bring it back to where we are right now. So we have a lot of things to talk about, and hopefully we'll be able to get through most of them today. And I hope it will be very enlightening to our audience here. It's been very enlightening to me to go through all this stuff. Okay.
Ben Martin, I am thinking that a Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast should probably be scheduled as well to go through this, because this is a lot of information. So let's go on this, Ben Martin.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Black Americans in the Revolutionary War. And in the Revolutionary War, thousands of Black Americans entered the war. And for the most part, they were fighting not just for the freedom of America or the oppression of Great Britain. They were really fighting for their personal freedom from slavery. A promise was made to them by both sides that whoever would fight honorably would be able to gain their independence, their freedom, besides fighting in the war. So in so doing, not only would they win their personal freedom, but distinguish themselves in the war effort. So here are a few examples of some of the Black Americans that contributed in our founding and to the Revolutionary War. So the first one was Crispus Attucks, and I think you probably recognize the name.
Mm-hmm.
And he was credited by historians as being the first American martyr in the march toward independence. And on 5 March 1777, that was the Boston Massacre date, on the streets of Boston, he was one of the men who confronted a group of British soldiers called to quell the ruckus of the angry American crowd that was protesting outside a British customs office. These men were fed up with the British taxes and the presence of the occupying British troops in the city. And according to witnesses, Crispus was the first of a five to fall victim to the British guns, receiving 2 shots in his chest. One wasn't so bad. The other one was very devastating.
And Ben, what year was that again?
That was 1770.
Okay, great. 1770, okay. Got it. Okay.
Right. Did I say that wrong? I
thought I heard 1777, and that's why I wanted to, because that didn't seem like that was right. So it was in 1770, huh?
Correct.
Okay,
on
got
5
it.
5 March. And this was obviously before the Boston Tea Party, but it was after all of the different taxes that had been levied against the American colonies. So Crispus was a large, middle-aged, multiracial man who worked as a sailor, a rope maker and a stevedore there in Boston. His father was an African slave, and his mother was a Native American. Crispus had also been a slave, but in 1750, he had escaped from his owner and was never caught. He was honored in death in a manner that no person of color, and especially no one who had been an escaped slave, was ever honored. Samuel Adams organized a procession to carry the caskets of Atticus and the other victims to Faneuil Hall. According to historic accounts, the procession was estimated to be a number over 10,000 people, which was half of the Boston population at that time. Crispus and the other victims lay in state in the hall for 3 days. In 1964, Martin Luther King honored Crispus again. He wrote in 1964 that black school children know that the first American to shed blood in the revolution that freed his country from British oppression was a black seaman named Crispus Atticus.
Wow.
Today, school and parks are also named after him. So that's the first guy that we want to recommend, the black American that helped in the Revolutionary War. Second one was Salem Poor, a patriotic soldier. He began his life as a Massachusetts slave and ended it as an American hero. In the late 1740s, he purchased his own freedom. And 20 years later, soon after, he joined the Continental Army in the fight for independence. He enlisted multiple times and fought in the very important battles of Saratoga and Monmouth Courthouse. He is most famous, though, for his heroism at the Battle of Bunker Hill, or Breed's Hill. There, his contributions impressed his fellow soldiers. And after the war ended, 14 of his fellow soldiers that were there with him at the Battle of Bunker Hill formally recognized his superb battle skills and sent a petition to the General Court of Massachusetts, calling him out as a brave and gallant soldier and saying that he conducted himself like an experienced officer in that battle. And the third group that we're going to mention of black Americans was the 1st Rhode Island Regiment. It was an integrated revolutionary force. And it was the first Continental Army unit mostly composed of New England black Americans. They illustrated the black American skills as soldiers and their deep commitment to their fellow soldiers on the battlefield. Although George Washington had initially placed a ban on black soldiers serving in the Army, with the Continental Army, he reconsidered it late in the 1770s because of the dwindling manpower. And as a result, in 1778, the Rhode Island legislature declared that both free and enslaved black Americans could serve. Those patriots were also promised freedom at the end of their honorable service. And although the first Rhode Island Regiment was only about 130 soldiers, they fought like they were a much larger force. The commanding general, famous General John Sullivan, praised the soldiers for their success against attacks at the Battle of Newport, saying that they exhibited desperate valor in repelling three furious Hessian infantry assaults. Those are all quotes. When the 1st Rhode Island Regiment was repositioned to Virginia amongst the several thousand other troops assembled there, they stood out as professional soldiers, most neatly dressed and best under arms, as well as the most precise in their maneuvers.
Wow, that is really fascinating. I had heard the story because I think you had told me the story of Crispus Attucks, but I did not know these others. That is fascinating.
I think it is, too, and it's just a great, it says a great deal about the black Americans that were fighting to help win our independence and fighting for their freedom, too. The fourth person we're going to talk about did not fight. Her name was Phyllis Wheatley. She was a patriot poet. She was a revolutionary intellect who waged a war for freedom with her words. She was captured as a child in West Africa and taken to America and enslaved. In her bondage, her owners did something that was actually illegal and rarely ever done. They educated her and supported her literary pursuits. And in 1773, she was around 20 years old then, she became the first Black American and only the third woman to publish a poetry book in America. Shortly after publishing her book, her owners gave her her freedom. Influential colonists read her poems and lauded her talent. Her work, which reflected her close knowledge of the ancient classics as well as the biblical theology, carried strong messages against slavery, and it became a rallying cry for abolitionists. She also advocated for independence of our country, artfully expressing support for General Washington's Revolutionary War in her poem, To His Excellency, General Washington. Washington, who himself had been forced to end his formal education at age 11, appreciated Wheatley's support and extolled her talent. The commander even invited her to meet him, explaining he would be happy to see a person so favored by the muses. But I thought that was pretty amazing.
Yeah. So, hey, Ben Martin, let's go to break because that completes this first component of this, right?
Well, we have one. We have actually two more people, but yeah, we'll keep those
as a cliffhanger. Okay.
Okay. Good.
Let's go over to Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. Jason McBride, it was great to see you last night at our Voters Guide event, our Salon Series Voters Guide event over at Water's Edge Winery last night.
Yeah, that was a good time. A lot of fun, some good debate, and some very good information. Boy, you and Rick really put some hard work into that, and we appreciate it very much.
We did. We put hours and hours and hours. I had not mentioned it when we talked about the Gallagher Amendment, or that very first one, which is basically a repeal of the Gallagher Amendment. I spent a lot of hours on the phone with Dennis Gallagher, with Joanne Groff, who is the property state tax administrator, trying to get our brain around exactly what this means. And so this is our best recommendations on this. And I loved it also. Not everybody agreed, Jason. And I loved the robust conversation as well.
Well, that's what America is about, is disagreement without nastiness, and I guess civil disagreement would be the best way to describe it. That was just fine.
Yeah, nobody burned anything down, and I really thought that was great. Generally, I would say we probably agreed on most everything, but it was just a great evening. So what does the market say today about the debate?
Well, yesterday was very strong as far as the movement, but we didn't have the strong trading volume I would have liked. This morning, right now, the futures are just down a little bit, like 40 points on the Dow. So it's not saying a whole heck of a lot. I got to tell you, Kim, I think we should expect pretty much exactly what we saw out of the debates last year. We should expect that the moderators will not be fair and balanced, and they'll try to drop some surprise gotchas on Donald Trump whenever they can, while coddling Joe Biden and making sure that he gets as protected as possible. And, as far as I'm concerned, that goes for our moderator tonight, Mr. Chris Wallace, who should be over at CNN rather than at Fox News, if you ask me.
It is going to be interesting tonight, Jason McBride. You know, we are doing this show with Ben Martin. I know you're a very big fan of Ben Martin. I find this so fascinating, these documents and these speeches of our America's founding, and I know that you're a big fan of Ben Martin's.
Well, yep, I like listening to Ben. I think he's definitely understands this stuff better than just about anybody, and I enjoy listening to his descriptions of events that were very important to our history. We'll see what Ben has to say about the debate tonight, which will be pretty important to our history as well, I would think.
I would think so as well. So Jason McBride, people can reach you at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good. Bye, Kim.
Okay, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll talk with Ben Martin.
Metropolitan Total Property is more than landscaping. Locally owned and operated since 1987, their team is proud to be your neighbor and live in the community. Metropolitan Total Property stands behind their work, and your complete satisfaction is their top priority. Kim Munson highly recommends Metropolitan Total Property for landscaping and more. She was one of their very first clients way back in 1987. Be sure to check out MetropolitanTotalProperty.com for their complete menu of services. Again, that's MetropolitanTotalProperty.com.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Go over to Facebook and give us a like. We would greatly appreciate that. We've got our voter's guide on the website now. It is extensive. I worked with Rick Turnquest on that. I would highly recommend that you check that out also. On the line with me is Ben Martin. You know him. He is a patriotic historian, a West Point grad, a former Army Ranger, and loves our American history. And we're talking about the contribution of Black Americans. We're going to talk about slavery. I have a feeling we are going to be recording a podcast on this, Ben Martin, because it is such a big subject. We're talking about the contributions of Black Americans in the Revolutionary War. You said you had two other people that you would like to introduce to us.
Right. This is talking about in the Revolutionary War. The next guy I want to talk about, and I'll talk about really quickly, is Peter Salem. And Peter Salem is not to be confused with Salem Poor, who was also a Patriot soldier that we talked about earlier. And Salem Poor also had a major contribution in the Battle of Bunker Hill. Salem earned his place in history for his role in that famous battle at Bunker Hill. And although the British defeated the Continental Army in this encounter, it wasn't a total loss for the Patriots. Their killing of many redcoats encouraged them to keep up the fight and kind of gave them confidence that they could stand against the British soldiers that were more professionally trained and much better equipped. And many historians credit Salem with killing a key officer of the crown, a Major John Pitcairn. And most people probably don't recognize that name, but I think you probably do, Kim. He was a Marine that led those troops that left Boston to go out and fight in the battles of Lexington and Concord. And he was killed by Salem as he was scaling the top of the American Redoubt and demanding that the Patriots surrender. Salem's role is believed to have been memorialized in John Turnbull's famous painting, The Battle of Bunker Hill.
Oh, nice.
So the last guy we're going to talk about in terms of contributions of the Revolutionary War, there are others we could talk about, but tried to keep them to the ones that really had a lot and we could do it really quick. His name was James Armistead Lafayette. He was a double agent. He was a spy. Has his life changed drastically during the Revolutionary War? He went from an enslaved person in Virginia to a double agent, passing intel and misinformation between the two warring sides, the Americans and the British. When Olmsted joined the Patriot efforts, they assigned him to infiltrate the enemy, so he pretended to be a runaway slave wanting to serve the crown, and he was welcomed by the British with open arms. At first, they assigned him menial support tasks, but they soon came to understand that he was a strategic resource due to his vast knowledge of the local terrain. And Olmsted's role got more interesting when the British directed him to start spying on the Patriots. Since his loyalty remained with the colonists, he claimed to be bringing the British intel about the Continental Army, but he was actually pushing incorrect information to foil their plans. In the meantime, he was learning details of the British battle plans, which he brought back to his commander, who was General Lafayette. This served the Americans well because of Olmsted's efforts. They got the insight they needed to successfully execute the decisive siege of Yorktown, which effectively ended the war. Years later, after a testimonial from the French general Lafayette that helped secure Olmsted's freedom, the former slave changed his surname to Lafayette.
Interesting.
So those are some of the people, some of the black Americans that contributed to our cause in the Revolutionary War. The next thing I would like to talk about, Kim, is the Northwest Ordinance of 1787.
Okay.
And this ordinance was prepared by the Congress in New York City during the famous summer of 1787, at the same time as the Constitutional Convention was meeting in Philadelphia and preparing our Constitution. The Confederation Congress passed the Northwest Ordinance of 1787 on 13 July 1787, and on 7 August 1789, 2 years later, now President George Washington signed it into law. The primary effect of this ordinance was the creation of the Northwest Territory as the first organized territory of the United States out of the region south of the Great Lakes, north and west of the Ohio River, and east of the Mississippi River. Arguably the single most important piece of legislation passed by the members of the earlier Continental Congresses, other than, the Declaration of Independence. It established the precedent by which the federal government would be sovereign and expand westward across North America, with the admission of new states, rather than with the expansion of the existing states and their established sovereignty under the old Articles of Confederation. It is the most important legislation that Congress has passed with regard to American public domain lands. There are so many good things about this ordinance, but today we will limit our discussion to Article 6, the prohibition of slavery in the territories. The prohibition of slavery in the territory had the practical effect of establishing the Ohio River as the boundary between free and slave territories in the regions between the Appalachian Mountains and the Mississippi River. This division helped to set the stage for the national competition over admitting free and slave states. The basis of a critical question in the American politics in the 19th century until the Civil War. And this is what it says here. It says, this is Article 6 of the six articles in the Northwest Ordinance. There shall be neither slavery nor involuntary servitude in the said territory, otherwise than in the punishment of crimes whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, provided always that any person escaping into the same from whom labor or service is lawfully claimed in any one of the original states, such fugitives may be lawfully reclaimed and conveyed to the person claiming his or her service or labor as aforesaid. So this, the language of this ordinance prohibits slavery, but it did not emancipate the slaves already held by settlers in the territory. Efforts in the 1820s by pro-slavery forces to legalize slavery in the territory failed, but an indentured servant law allowed some slaveholders to bring slaves under that status. They could not be brought or sold, however. Southern states voted for the law because they did not want to compete with the territory over tobacco as a commodity crop, because it was so labor-intensive that it was grown profitably only with slave labor. The balance of the number of free versus slave states was not affected, and most slave states in the 1790 were south of the Ohio River. So that's what happened then, but as we know, in 1820, that changed by the Missouri Compromise. So that line changed. And so when that Missouri Compromise was passed in 1820, Thomas Jefferson was still alive, and although he had sworn that he would not do anything politically for the rest of his life, this really shook him. And so he wrote a letter to express his concern to William Short on 13 April of 1820. And I'm going to read a little excerpt.
And what is the, for our listeners, tell them what the Missouri Compromise did.
Well, the Missouri Compromise was a compromise because they wanted to keep the balance of slave and free states. They wanted to keep it in balance. They wanted to keep it equal. And so we had Maine that wanted to come in as a free state, and Missouri wanted to come in as a slave state. So they allowed that to happen. Although the Northwest Ordinance, although it was talking about just the north, the land of what we now call the Midwest, you know, those five states there, it was also to set precedent for the expansion of America and the incorporation of new states that were territories before into our nation. But this changed it all, because now they had placed that line, that the line of demarcation for slavery, instead of it being I'm losing it now.
Okay, I think it was the river, the Ohio River, was that?
The Ohio River, that's uh-huh. what I was thinking about. I was thinking about the Mississippi, the mm-hmm. Ohio River. Now it was the southern portion of the Missouri state line. And so that really concerned Jefferson, and it concerned a lot of people that we were going to expand slavery into the new territories. And this is the excerpt that he said: "Although I had laid down as a law to myself never to write, talk, or even think of politics, to know nothing of public affairs, and therefore had ceased to read newspapers, yet the Missouri question aroused and filled me with alarm. The old schism of federal and Republican threatened nothing because it existed in every state and united them together by the fraternism of party." That's a word that he used that is not a real word, but he used it. He wrote it down. "But the confidence of a marked principle, moral and political, with a geographical line once conceived, I figured, would never more be obliterated from the mind, that it would be recurring on every occasion and renewing irritations until it would kindle such mutual and mortal hatred as to render separation preferable to eternal discord. I have been among the most sanguine in believing that our union would be of long duration. I now doubt it much, and see the event at no great distance, and the direct consequence of this question, not by the time which has been so confidently counted on." So he was really, this really bothered him, and that he knew that this was going to hurt, it was going to hurt our nation greatly. And he basically said, "I'm just happy that I'm not going to be alive to see this when it happens." And so he really was concerned about that and about the changing this and letting this great sin of slavery expand into our Western territories.
Wow, that is fascinating. Ben Martin, let's go to break. This is going way too quickly, as it always does. I'm talking with Ben Martin, patriotic historian, about our important documents and speeches for America's founding. This is brought to you by the Harris family. Before we go to break, though, I want to talk a little bit about Castlegate Knife and Tool. Hal Van Herke, we'll be talking with him tomorrow morning. It's a family-owned business right here in the Sedalia, Colorado. They've got a great array of knives and tools. I'd highly recommend that you go out and check them out, and they're open 7 days a week, but they have all kinds of knives. I need to get a utility knife. That's my next thing that I'm going to do, so I'll need to talk to Hal about that. But check out Castlegate.com. That's Castlegate.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we will continue the conversation with Ben Martin.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's kimmunson.com. We've got our voter's guide there. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. On the line with me is Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, West Point grad, has really studied our American founding. We're talking about the important documents and speeches of our founding. We're talking today about slavery, contributions of Black Americans to our founding. Ben, I am pretty sure that we need to schedule a time to record a podcast. I'm hoping maybe this Friday morning might work for you, because I think this is such important information, and we're not going to get through it. We only have one more segment. So we'll get that scheduled, okay, Ben?
Okay, that's great, Kim. I'm sorry that there's so much here, and I tried to just bring it down. So it's less pages than we've done before, but it's going slow. I guess it's going more slowly because there's so much more there.
There's so much there. So let's continue on. Don't feel hurried. And then we'll use this again as a cliffhanger to check out our podcast. And with any luck, maybe we can get it done this week. So continue on, Ben Martin.
Okay. So the next thing I'm going to talk about, we talked about, remember, Black Americans in our Revolutionary War. And so now we've grown past the 1820s and, you know, the compromise of 1820 and then the one of 1850, which would be sparks to start this thing called our Civil War, this great tragedy in American history. The next thing we're going to talk about is Black Americans in the Civil War. The Emancipation Proclamation, which we are also going to talk about, also allowed Black men to serve in the Union Army. This had been illegal under a federal law enacted in 1792, although African Americans had served in the Army in the War of 1812, and the law had never applied to the Navy. With their stake in the Civil War now patently obvious, African Americans joined the service in significant numbers. By the end of the war, about 180,000 African Americans were in the Army, which amounted to about 10% of the troops in that branch, and another 20,000 Black Americans were serving in the Navy. Initially, Black troops were paid significantly less than their white counterparts. White privates made $13 a month, and their uniforms were paid for. But Black soldiers earned only $10 a month, with a $3 deduction each month for uniform costs.
Oh, my gosh.
Really kind of unfair. By June of 1864, this had become an embarrassment that Congress deemed that white and Black troops should be paid equally and made the action retroactive. African-American soldiers were routinely issued equipment that was much older or poorly made in comparison with the equipment that their white comrades received. Black soldiers also faced a threat that no white troops faced. When they were captured by the rebels, black troops could be put back into slavery, whether they had been free or slaves before the proclamation. They also suffered much harsher treatment if they were held as prisoners of war. And despite these many disadvantages under which they labored, black troops who saw battle performed admirably. African Americans participated directly in fights at Milliken's Bend, Louisiana, Port Hudson, Fort Wagner, which is in South Carolina. You know, that's where the 54th fought. That's where the famed 54th Massachusetts Regiment lost two-thirds of its officers and nearly half of its enlisted men. They also fought at Petersburg, Virginia, and Nashville, Tennessee. That's another battle that I've been to that battlefield, too. It's pretty amazing there. 25 black Americans were awarded the Medal of Honor for their bravery during the Civil War.
Wow.
Pretty amazing.
Yes.
So we're going to quickly, if we can, we're going to talk a little bit about the Emancipation and the 13th Amendment. The Emancipation Proclamation was a military policy. Lincoln had said from the first inauguration that he had no power as the president to change the laws governing slavery in the states where it already existed. And no, he knew that under the Constitution he couldn't do that without violating his powers. But he knew that he could do that as a military necessity. And so the Emancipation Proclamation was a military policy. The Civil War was fundamentally a conflict over slavery. However, Lincoln knew that in the Emancipation, when it came, would have to be gradual, and the most important thing was to prevent the Southern Rebellion from severing the Union permanently in two. But as the Civil War entered its second summer in 1862, thousands of enslaved people had fled Southern plantations to Union lines, and the federal government didn't have a clear policy on how to deal with them. So the Emancipation, Lincoln saw, would further undermine the Confederacy while providing the Union with a new source of manpower to crush the rebellion. And his powers, his war powers as the chief executive, would allow him to do such things of military necessity. So in July of 1862, the president presented his draft preliminary Emancipation Proclamation to his cabinet. The Secretary of State, William Seward, urged him to wait until things were going better for the Union on the field of battle, or emancipation might look like a last gasp of a nation on the brink of defeat. Lincoln agreed and returned to edit the draft a little more over the summer. And on 17 September of 1862, pretty close to our time right now, the Battle of Antietam gave Lincoln the opportunity he needed. He issued the preliminary proclamation to his cabinet on 22nd of September, and it was published the following day. As a cheering crowd gathered at the White House, Lincoln addressed them, "I can only trust in God. I have made no mistake. It is now for the country and the world to pass judgment on it." So what he did then, once he issued that on 23 September, that was the Lincoln famous 100 days. I'm going to give you 100 days to consider this. And then on 1 January of 1863, if you haven't given up in this Civil War, your slaves, I will free your slaves. Now, he really didn't have any power to do that in the states, the Confederate states, but just giving them that incentive to leave their lines, to leave their army, to leave the fields, and so that the Confederates had to put soldiers in the fields to keep producing their crops. That was a really critical and very strategic move. And so, and he also let it be known that the Union troops would accept runaway slaves and protect them. And so that's what happened. And of course, on the 1st of January, nobody accepted his invitation to quit this civil war and to become to come back into the Union. And so that went into effect, the Emancipation Proclamation. And that freed the slaves, but it did not end slavery. And it did not free the slaves in all of the states. And it was a but even despite all these limitations, it was a crucial turning point in the evolution of Lincoln's views of slavery, as well as a turning point in the Civil War. And by the end of the Civil War, some 200,000 black Americans would serve in the Union Army and Navy, as we talked about earlier, striking a mortal blow against the institution of slavery and paving the way for the eventual abolition by the 13th Amendment.
Wow. Ben Martin, we're going to have to stop there. We are out of time. So we will get a podcast scheduled. Ben Martin, thank you so much for this great information on America's important speeches and documents. And we will get that podcast scheduled so that we can finish up this discussion. Thank you so much.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Okay, our quote for today is from Bob Woodson. He said, "Freedom, even in a democracy, requires a level of civility and intergroup respect that must undergird the right to vote." So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.